It's the Daily Talk Show, episode 785.
Welcoming to the studio, Rami Ickmore. Hey, buddy.
Welcome, welcome.
Thanks for coming on the show, mate.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
Mate, first podcast you were just saying, this is. Welcome.
Welcome to the world. Welcome to...
Matt, honestly, guys, I've never done a podcast before, never listened to one, so I'm a virgin in so many ways. Here you go.
I mean, so you
take
are,
it easy on me.
No, we will. I mean, you are a seasoned professional in entrepreneurship. How do you explain what you do in 2020?
Mate, how do I explain what I do in 2020? Mate, I'll just get up and go about my day, but it's been very challenging, I guess, with COVID-19 and all the rest of it. So it's changed me as a person. It's changed me as a – it changed the way I think in business, to be honest with you.
Well, I know a few people that have a restaurant. You've got about 30. Is it – how many have you actually got? More than 30?
Yeah, 30 restaurants up and down the East Coast. So, yeah, things are different because different states have different laws and all the rest of it. So it's been very, very challenging with what's going on at the moment.
This morning we were just chatting about something that happened in January. Josh was on a podcast and it feels like it was legit 2 years ago with everything that's happened. What did your January look like and what was your sort of mission then and how much has it changed since?
Yeah, so January, I guess we're going about a normal year, and you know, it's going to be, we're looking forward to 2020. Everything was going to be, we had plans to open up in New Zealand, you know, grow a little bit more. And then, yeah, so it looked like another January. It was fine.
Mm, and I mean, that's where it's, you'd never know that this would be the case. And so, Roche's, your restaurants, they're flying along, and then all of a sudden COVID hits. And I mean, were you in denial that it was going on? I mean, a lot of business owners were like, oh, we got to push forward. So let's just see how it plays out. How did you approach COVID?
Mate, look, when it first started, like, you know, when COVID, you know, started coming up with the news and started thinking, oh my God, how can this affect us? What's going to happen? Absolute denial. You're right. You don't want to know. You don't want to face the truth. And then I guess... it all come to a head. It was true. I remember on Friday night, so we shut down on a Monday. That was when dining stopped as of midday. Dining Monday, I think is the 23rd or 21st or something of March. But I remember on Friday thinking, I was out on Friday actually. I was out on the town. I remember just going, you know, things were a little bit quieter. Things were different. I'm thinking, come Monday, man, there's going to be a different world. Mm. And yeah.
And so then, what was the first communication that you had to all of – so is it a franchise that you run? Like can you give us a sense of the structure and where you sort of fit in at all?
Absolutely. So, like, I'm the founder of the business. I've got a CEO. I've got a whole – you know, we've got a whole structure in place. But when COVID – like, when I started thinking COVID, I knew it was something – it was going to be different. It was no longer up to the CEOs and things like that. So being the founder, I made sure I was here on Monday. I knew there was a big decision to be made once, because what I was waiting on, so New Zealand, if we look at New Zealand went into full lockdown, but they actually, they forced their restaurants to close down. So they didn't give an option to the restaurants to stay open for anything. They just said, you have to close down, end of story. So what I started playing in my head over the weekend, if they keep us open, I'm going to convert our restaurants into a pickup and delivery business. So I started playing that in my head. And that's sort of where I come from. So I come from the Pizza Hut world, Domino's world. So I guess it wasn't going to be too hard of a transition in my head.
When you say you come from those worlds, I mean, I come from those worlds in a different way. I'm a customer, you know, I buy. What does that mean that you come from those worlds?
Yeah, fair course. So I started my journey, I guess, in the workplace as a Pizza Hut driver back in 93. So I was doing my HSC and knew I was failing miserably. So I go, you know, I better go and find myself a job.
Rami, myself a cut. Yeah. Was this the days of Dougie, the TV personality that was on the Pizza Hut ads?
Mate, Dougie was my favorite. Yep, absolutely. It was Dougie, mate. It was Dougie.
Did you meet Dougie?
Never got to meet Dougie, but yeah, there was a lot of Dougies working for us.
Were you a Dougie?
Can we call you Dougie?
No. You can call me a Dougie.
And so you were doing that. So did you work your way up, or like you mentioned Domino's there? How does this all come about?
Yeah, man. So just briefly, you know, I started delivering pizzas and worked my way up through management, all the rest of it. And then I finished with the Pizza Hut stint, and then I opened a couple of Domino's franchise. So I got to learn a little bit about the franchising world and about how, you know, pickup and delivery and that side of the world works.
Mm-hmm. With franchises, Tommy and I were talking about this the other day. When should you get involved as a franchisee versus when should you just go out on your own and open up a shop, you know, with your own brand?
Man, it's interesting. You know, people get into franchising, like franchisees go and see a franchisor for a franchise for easy money. So really, man, it depends. Look.
Why did you do it?
It's a hard. Why did I franchise originally?
Yeah, like why did you get into like say Domino's and things like that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I thought. Look, I got into it for the right reasons. I got into it because I wanted to make Domino's a bigger brand at the time. Mm-hmm. I was committed to the. You know, I work from the heart, so I was like committed to making a difference to that brand, and I wanted to make a difference from the what I understood from Pizza Hut to take to Domino's. But when I got into the system, I realized that that's not what it's about. You know, franchising and franchisors are two different things. We're on two different pages.
Uh-huh. That you didn't have much say or control being a Domino's franchisee
There was no control, and it was never about the you know, and being a franchisee and the way they treated the franchisees, and this is a whole system, this isn't just us. It's always about the bottom line. And that's because the way the franchisees sort of put pressure on the franchisor to act, they always put pressure on, you know, the bottom line. What's in it for me? As opposed to what's in it for the whole brand, and as a result, what do I get out of it? So it wasn't a good fit for me.
Mm-hmm. So you shifted Rochet's into a pickup and delivery across that 3-month lockdown.
Yep.
I mean, were you looking at the financials saying, we're going to completely hemorrhage cash here, or are you saying we could have a real business out of this?
No. It was going to be, we're going to hemorrhage here. There was no question here. So I had my CEO and CFO saying to me, Rami, we have to close. Look at this. It's going to cost us about 120 grand a week to stay open. I still remember the numbers clearly in my head. And I said to my CFO, I'm good friends with, so I said to him, best mates, and I said to him, so how long does that mean? How much money do we have in the bank? And he goes, oh, mate, we'll do it for about 12 to 15 weeks. I said, let's go. Let's try and make the most out of this situation. People are going to close down. Let's keep our staff employed. Let's hope COVID-19 goes away tomorrow, which we had deep down, I knew it wasn't. But it was a matter, let's stay open. Let's keep everyone employed because we can't afford to lose 23 years. Because if we close down today, then I've lost 23 years of what I've been building. So, yeah. Okay, let's go. And in my head was, okay, I'll lose everything. I started with nothing. I'll get up on my feet again. But did I, in the back of my head, think that possibly I could also climb out of this? Yeah, I did. I had a bit of hope. But was I certain? The answer was no.
Mm-hmm. And so having that experience in the delivery side of things, Uber Eats and all the different services have sort of come up over the last few years. How have you seen those services in the market from an entrepreneurial perspective?
Sorry, the Uber Eats part, do you want to know about?
Yes. So do you, like, are you, as a business owner, do you see Uber Eats as a terrible part for, you know, you're doing the deal with the devil in regards to, you know, you're giving away 30%, you know, every single time someone does an order. When should a business play with, say, those big guys versus trying to create their own systems?
Yeah, well, Uber Eats is, look, it's very convenient. I mean, it's a great, like, they've found a gap in the market and they've been able to, you know, utilize it, I guess. But yeah, you're right. It's very, very hard to do business with them. And I guess they don't want to do business with the small player. They focus so much on the big player. You know, I'm sure McDonald's and KFC and all the big brands are not paying the 30-35%. So, but yeah, did they force us to get in bed with them during the COVID-19? Yeah, they did.
So is there a strategy though where it's like this is temporary? Like I've had like the local Mexican restaurant, anytime I get an Uber Eats, that they put a card saying, hey, just fucking order direct. And so we'd been doing that through their website. Is there a strategy around that?
I didn't do anything like that. No way. Uh-huh. Of course we did. So what
is
we did was
is like, because I have no idea. I guess Uber Eats can't stop you from doing that.
Exactly. They can't. I mean, you're delivering what you want. Honestly, legally, I don't know what they could do if they want to stop me delivering tomorrow. Well, good luck to them. They could F off. Yeah. You know, they are. The truth is, but they do, they got a structure where they need to charge 30%. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But it just doesn't suit the restaurateur. It doesn't suit poor mum and dad. You know, that's the drama. It doesn't suit the industry. But yeah, the strategy was, let's place our own cards. And that's what we did. And we started our own call center. So I jumped on and got a 1-3000 number. So a real nice phone number.
Great number.
And
yeah, it's very
good. There you go, promoted again, 1-3000, 1-3000. No, but then what I did was I went out and bought 30 cars. So I went out and bought 30 cars from MG. They were cheap cars. I think I paid about $13,500 for them. And I used the front of house staff. So myself and the franchisees, we used the front of house staff to start delivering food ourselves. So as opposed to delivering food to the table, I had 30 cars now delivering food to people's houses.
Wow. So this is in what time period? Like buying 30 cars sounds outrageous.
Yeah. Deploy the Duggies. Get them out there.
Exactly. Let's go and find. Well, Duggies did exist, so that's good. But what happened? Honestly, man, everything was quick, and because I think that day, like I feel the vibe. I still like I'm looking up at my office right now, and the vibe was. How can I say it? It was like everyone felt like they were in the trenches. So everyone was willing to fight. Everyone was willing to jump on and say, what do I need to do? So making decisions was so easy. And because I was all in, so I had nothing to lose in my eyes. I already committed all my money. So it was like simple decisions. Buy this, buy that, do that, do this. So everything was, there was no red tape. Everything was happening. And the people felt that. My staff, the people around me felt that. And they were like, So everyone was allowing things to happen really, really quickly, mate. It was unbelievable. Like we worked here 7 days a week and people were working long hours without asking anyone. It was just, I think it was just the whole vibe of what was going on during that time.
What motivates you? Is it, stress and pressure, or is it, just you're a motivated vision guy?
Mate, just motivated, mate. Mate, whatever I do in life, I'm always like 100% committed. Wants the best result, wants to give it my all. So whether I'm playing cricket, playing footy, drinking at the bar, whatever you want, I always want to come first. You know what I mean? I'm very competitive. I guess it comes from a competitive place, and maybe the fear of having nothing. That's the biggest thing. I grew up with nothing, so the fear of having nothing is sort of that's in there, and as a result, I'm always wanting to win.
Being entrepreneurial and working in sort of hospitality, we've heard stories of the big names who have ended up underpaying their staff, and I sort of empathize with moving quickly and just having some fuck-ups in the back end, and before you know it, you lose your house and everything. How much of that is on your mind, and how do you prepare to make sure that you are doing everything by the book?
Look, this has been my biggest success. The biggest success that I've had in the business is that I've always worked to make sure that there can't be stuff ups like that. You cannot rip people off. That's once you rip people off, and in my eyes, you're a thief, and you know what I mean. And then, I have a franchise. So you speak about franchising and franchisees and people. I know recently 7-Eleven, and there's companies out there who underpay their staff. I don't tolerate any of that. Zero tolerance. Because if you're stealing from your staff, you're stealing from me, the franchisor, you're stealing from your suppliers. You're just, it's stealing. And, and you're stealing from a person who's taken home food to his family.
I guess part of it is like trying to make sure that you, as a business, don't shit the bed as well. So how do you sort of mix being generous, paying fairly, but then also watching the bottom line so that you know that you've got longevity?
It's not an option, Josh. Sorry, man. I get your question, but it's not even considered. It's just you just got to make sure, like, mate, integrity is number one. In business, if you haven't got integrity, you can't grow. And I hear what you're saying. And that's why they're the people who grow. That's the truth. If you see a company growing, at the end, the founders usually of a company that's grown, there's massive integrity there. You see companies and big names like what you said who don't do the right thing. They're the people who sort of, it's no longer a founder making a decision now. It's CEOs and CFOs and all the rest of it. But I think as long as it's with a founder and he's been able to, but you don't have people working for you for 23 years like myself, who's sort of like, help you grow the brand, because you can't do nothing on your own. Mm-hmm. And unless they see somebody with integrity, you got no chance.
We had a guest last week that said, you know, successful businesses are just presenting problems in a different way. So it's all the issues that come along with growing from one restaurant to 30. What has been the sort of biggest hurdle for you as a founder along this journey?
Matt, I'll tell you what, the hardest thing is going from one restaurant to two restaurants, to be honest with you. That was probably the hardest thing. Because once you know how to multiply, it becomes, it's sort of like you work out the system and it becomes a lot easier. So, yes, I'll say to you, from one to two has probably been the hardest. And then you get to a certain number now, like, you know, you get around the 20, 25. You know, it's just all multiplying. You learn the skills as you go. I guess where it gets a little bit harder, where it's more challenging now, when we go into state, you know, Queensland, ACT, and you start having different laws and different, you know, different guidelines. That sort of, you know, even when you speak about payroll, even if you mm-hmm. go back a little bit, you know, there's different, you know, you have to work on different, with different, what's the name, systems.
Yeah. Tommy and I are always like walking past cafes or restaurants and we're doing the numbers in our heads and we see, you know, quiet, even before COVID, you see sort of, it's not full, there's not many people, and then you work out, okay, that lease, what's that worth? What are they paying their staff? How do you create a successful hospo business when it comes to the dollars and cents?
Yeah, look, I could speak for my business, I'll speak for mm-hmm. my business. So I'm in the restaurant part of the game. So yes, you walk past a restaurant, it's quiet during the day, you know, but we rely on peaks. So we rely on Friday, Saturday nights, we rely on Sundays. And I guess the challenge as a business is to grow that peak period. But yeah, going to your point, you've got to control your food costs, you've got to control your labor costs, and you've got to make sure your occupancy cost is at a good percent from day one. You got to have a good understanding of that, or otherwise you will fall flat on your face, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so does that mean, because I can imagine, especially with, you know, reality shows like MasterChef, it feels like everyone's going into that foodie realm, especially here in Melbourne. Like, how do you make sure, like, should people be taking on debt? Like, what are the things, what are the key things that people do that ends up not working out? Like, are there sort of telltale signs of a bad business?
Yeah. The number one thing I say is do not go into hospitality if you're going to go in it for the bottom line. Mm-hmm. You're not going to succeed. Hospitality from day one, I learned, is all about generosity. So have generosity. Do not borrow. If you are borrowing money to go into hospitality, again, you're going to fall flat on your face. Mm-hmm. It is a tough game. There is tight margins. We work on very, very tight margins. Even the biggest there is, you know, the Golden Arches, they work on very, very tight margins. You know, we're talking 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%.
Get started then? I guess, like, for someone, do you just need to have cash in the bank to be able to make it work?
Absolutely, mate. You need to. Honestly, I would say have your own cash. You mm-hmm. have to. You can't afford to be partners with the bank. I could tell you that now. Uh-huh. It's too tight of an industry. And unfortunately, people see it from the outside and they think I can do it. And I know the failure rate in restaurants is like it's unbelievable. Like I think it's, you know what I mean. I think only 10% of restaurants succeed or something. It's like something ridiculous. So mate, there's a lot. So mate, you've got to have your own money. And it's not about knowing how to cook. It's not about knowing what good service is. You really have to understand everything. You really gotta, you know, you gotta be a bit of a mastermind at being able to work your books, especially when you're a small business and you're starting off. You gotta know what your food cost is, you've got to be able to manage that, you've got to be able to manage your labor. It's a very, very challenging business. It's very, very hard, but looks so simple on the outside. And I guess that's why so many people fall over. So my comment to people who want to start your restaurant, make sure you have a lot of business knowledge in the background. Like, you know, there's a lot of things you learn. Do courses, go and study at TAFE, some business courses, you know, university, whatever. You can't just, it's a complicated business. I'm going to say that.
In Victoria, there was, probably 7-8 years ago, there was a trend where cafes move to suburban areas, you know, old coin laundries on the corner in a little suburb. But it was a timing where that model excelled and it started going everywhere. And my brother's mates were a part of leading that charge. And we're talking about it on the weekend saying, you know, it was really timing, like good business heads, but also timing. You've been around for 23 years in that business. Where does timing place with a 23-year-old business that's been in the same industry?
Yep. So I tell you what the timing was. The timing was this is a different part. So 23 years ago in Sydney, especially, I could speak in the western suburbs, there was no cafes. So I entered a gap. It was a different, completely different game then. I entered a business. So I found a gap in the market. I knew there was people that wanted to go out, that wanted, you know, there was little cafes up, but there was nothing of that size where there's 100-seater, 200-seater people that can go out and meet and have late night. So I guess, and I started I started with no money, yeah? So I didn't have a nice fit out. I didn't have any of that. I just had a big place. And it was, yeah, so...
So in that position, when you first started and you don't have a nice place, I guess it can be pretty tempting to be like, oh, maybe I can get 50K from the bank for a better fit out, which might see more customers come in. What was your mindset at that point?
Yeah, well, I did that. So what happened was, but I did that originally. So first I opened up with nothing, and then when I saw an opportunity and I saw it growing, and there was a demand. There was no competition, no nothing, and I could see the demand was massive. Then I was able to sort of, you know, be brave and go out and borrow money. And I borrowed very little, yeah. So all I did was I borrowed 20,000. It was never, and that's what I did. So I borrowed slowly and I built slowly.
But you also saw the gap, whereas people are saying, "Let's open a cafe, let's take a heap of cash," but the gap's been filled. Many a time.
There's a lot of donut shops that were in Melbourne that are no longer there, right? Like there is that trend. And so where was the that 20 grand bits and pieces? How did you know where to place it?
I was on the floor. I was in the business. I felt the business. I spoke to the customers. So I understood, you know, oh, let's get a wood fire oven. So then wood fire pizza came, you know, became popular. So I put a wood fire oven in there. You know, then, you know, we upgraded coffee machines. We did, so we reacted to the customer's demands. I did what the customers want. It wasn't what I wanted. It was what the customers needed and wanted. Mm-hmm. It was a different time. And I got to be like, now you're taking me back, you know, 20 odd years. It was different today to starting a restaurant today. Today, you know, and because people are all around me come in and they get advice off me all the time saying, I'm going to start my own business. I want to open a restaurant. And unfortunately, I try and give them as much advice as I can, and I tell them not to do it. And some of them listen, some of them don't.
Yeah.
And the people that don't, you know, I don't know. Like, you know, it's very hard to find somebody. Honestly, in all the time that I've been in business, I've worked with two people who I know were capable of opening a restaurant because they had what it takes, and they understood what they were getting themselves into. That's the other thing. They understood what they're getting themselves into, and I knew they had the ability to make it work.
For Josh and I, so we have a video production company alongside this show that we do every day. And I think a learning recently has been that sort of jump from being just Josh and I as the founders to then actually having people on board. And it makes more sense when there's more people, but getting the people is the hardest thing. And finding the right people is even harder. For you, you mentioned that you have a CEO, you have, you know, marketing team. You know, all those main roles are filled. For you as a founder, how has it been identifying the right people to bring into your baby?
Mate, it's so hard, honestly. Like, you know, it's where I'm forever working with people. Like, where I've been very privileged is, where I've been very lucky is the key people in my business have stayed with me for, like, been with me for 20 years. So that's the secret. Otherwise, mate, honestly, to answer your question about how do you find good people and how do you find the right people, mate, it's so difficult, yeah? It's so difficult. You know, good people are so hard to find. You know, like, yeah, you just keep on working. You just keep on chipping away at it, I guess. I wish it was a simple solution. I wish I had the magic answer. I would be, I'd be very, very well off. But, yeah, it's very, very hard, mate. Finding people, and it's a very, very big challenge. I don't have the magic wand, mate. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, I think you could look at it as in you as a person, who do you like or who gravitates to you, and then you're applying the filter of what has worked. For you, when you look at the people around you, Why are they around you? Why have you decided to partner with them?
Love it. The people I have, the people I really welcome into my business are people who lead from the heart. That is the biggest thing. They're the things that I look at. So I look for people who lead from the heart, and then I know I'm happy to work with them. I know the rest of my team is happy to work with them, and the skill comes. So I definitely look for commitment, passion ahead of skill, if you like.
What do you think, where does gut instinct come into all of this?
It's for me specifically, Matt, it's about 99.9% gut. I definitely work from the gut. You know, it's simple. Your gut doesn't lie. You know, your head gives you mixed messages, and you could find all sorts of messages when you let your head do the thinking. You know, you could ask a million questions and have million different angles. So it's definitely the heart. That working from the heart is definitely the key for me. And that's been my success, and I think it's been my team's success.
Do you think that you have to communicate in a different way to the team when you're doing it that way? I can imagine CFOs or, sort of traditional heads are maybe more sort of in the numbers. Are you hiring specifically for people who can work with that?
I'll tell you quickly what's happened to me. So with COVID-19, it's been a very, very big eye-opener. So I let my Cs, my CFOs, my CEOs, whatever they are, I let them control the business a lot pre-COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And they started swaying the business towards numbers, to be honest with you. They started swaying the business to what I said earlier on, back to why I remembered in franchising, when I was franchising from Domino's and all the rest of it. So I felt that because I wasn't fully when COVID-19 kicked in, that's when I just sort of come in and threw everything out. Like what I said, I was all in. So I was all in everything. I was 100% committed. And so, to answer your question about them talking about numbers, I kind of stopped that.
Why do you think it happened? Were they KPI'd based on that? Or like what? It seems like a common thing, right? Like especially with a business, you even talk about margins being small and like all of those things are alarm bells when you're trying to survive. So how do you, if margins are small, and making, paying too much for labor or too much, at the supplier end or whatever it is, if that's going to be the difference between being an awesome business and shitting the bed, like how can you get them to not focus on the numbers?
You have to focus on numbers. There's no question there. But you definitely don't make it a priority. You definitely have it like if you've got an agenda and you've got 10 things on your agenda, it's definitely number 10. Mm-hmm. That's not what makes it. You focus on your top line. You focus on your service, you focus on your customers, you focus on all that. But if you're the kind of character who's focused on numbers, you're not usually working from the heart. You're working from the head. So you've already lost the first battle. You've lost the battle of focusing on your customer, focusing on your staff, focusing on your community, focusing on what counts to make a restaurant work. So so hopefully I've answered your question. You know what I mean? So yes, you need a bit of that. But that's got to be so far down. So you tell them to focus on everything else, and you say, "By the way, guys, just remember we have to be cautious." You know.
So, when you're thinking about people, say thinking about the staff and making sure that they're happy, what's the conversation or the thinking when you're like, "Okay, we're going to have to focus on delivery, but these 15 people out of the 30 are not going to like this idea. They're front of house. They're not fucking used to delivering. It's going to be a hard sell." How do you communicate what you think is good for someone or for the business versus not necessarily comfortable?
Mate, by just communicating from the heart, I think people hear passion. People love passion. And if you just communicate with passion and you're true about what you're saying, most people are going to sign up. And the people who aren't signing up, the people who aren't agreeing with you, well, really, they're not for you. It's as simple as that. And you've got to be brave enough. You've got to be brave enough to accept that. And I suffered that during COVID-19. You know, not everyone signed on. Not everyone come along and said, "Yeah, no worries, Rami, let's go and do it." No, not everyone did that. But enough people did, because I already had a little bit of that. Like that sort of culture existed in the business. That was the main culture.
How do you think Australia has handled this in terms of supporting businesses?
Man, it's been amazing. Like I can honestly speak for myself. I think whether it's landlords, like the major landlords, whether it's a government, whether it's the community. I think as long as you've shown that you've been proactive and you want, I think honestly, I think we've done very, very well as a country in all aspects. I know to Victoria today, mm-hmm. it's bad news, but otherwise, I think so far, mate. I think I'm proud. I'm proud to say that I live in Australia, and I'm proud to say that I have a business in Australia, and I'm proud to say that I'm. I've got an Australian-owned company, and we have a, I'm very, and how we've survived COVID-19, I'm very, mm-hmm. very proud.
When you are operating from the heart, I feel like emotion could potentially get into it a little bit more. How do you manage the emotional side of things? So I could imagine you have the benefits of having people that are super loyal, but I could imagine also you have like epic blow-ups and, when you're communicating at that level. Have you worked out a way of taking the good of the emotion, but then also when it comes to the harder conversations or where there could be a blow up, trying to sort of be less emotional?
Yeah, I tell you what, look, Josh, obviously you've been to my office, so I blow up all the time, mate. I blow up all the time. But as long as people know where you're blowing up from, and if people know you, and as long as you're, and you're absolutely right, there's blow ups every day in this office. But I tell you what, they're family blow ups.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're not blow ups where like you're going to lose your job. You know that. So if we, and I allow people to blow me up for the right reasons as well. So it's when you create that family, and again, I'm telling you, when you create that culture where it works from the heart, mm-hmm. of course, you're 100% right. There's going to be blow-ups every single, mate, always blow-ups. And you see him blowing up in the corner. You see two staff members blowing up. But you got nothing to worry about. It's just it's a lover's tiff. It's all good, mate. They're going to be having coffee in 5 minutes.
Is it a hard pill to swallow for those HR professionals that are used to sort of traditional ways of doing things? Like if you had an HR person come in just like that just doesn't get it?
What's HR?
yeah.
Mate. It's super interesting because I think that like you're what's fascinating about that is you are someone who cares about people. You care about making sure you look after them. And I love that you can do that, but also take away some of the rah-rah.
Mate, it's honestly, it's easy. I'll keep on saying it to people and all my management who are higher, whether at store level, or whatever it is, man, just be frank with people, be honest with people, and you watch how they respond. It's an easy game. It ain't complicated. It's so easy. Life is so easy. Business is so easy as long as you do it the right way. Mm-hmm. And mate, we're all on this planet trying to do the same thing. We're all trying to put food on our table for our family. We're all trying to, achieve a life so we can feel good about ourselves. As long as you focus on the basics, it's simple, man. It's honestly, it's so easy. And I guess some people have a different view, and I don't get it. And I'm not saying they're wrong, but for me, it's a simple game, really simple. I love what I do, and as a result, I love what I do. I enjoy what I do, and there's not enough hours in the day.
I love it because I think what you're talking about, your business is that it becomes a lifestyle for the people that work for it. Not that you're trying to take the piss, but it's like you want people who are spending 70% of their waking life working with your team, and you want it to feel less like a job. I think that's what we try and do here. But then there's also the reality that people need to sort of get out of that. How do you gain perspective that it is just a job? We are all here just trying to survive and do our thing. How do you remove yourself from that sort of work mindset away to something where it's perspective shifting?
It's not just a job. Honestly, I never look at it like that, and I don't think my staff do. I don't think anyone does. It's not just a job. It's part of our life. Like I think the word job, like what is a job? I don't know. I don't even think of. I don't think my people think of it as jobs, and I'll make sure they're the people that hang around. So it's maybe I'm in a different bubble here in my business, but honestly, it's not about jobs, man. It's about just life.
And so if it's not a job, it can then be your life. And then there is also the reality that your life isn't, there's other aspects to life other than trying to just survive. Mm-hmm. I think we get pulled into that where I need a disconnect sometimes, even though my job doesn't feel like a job. I also know I need a disconnect. How do you disconnect from the life, which is your work, which is the job?
Personally, the way I disconnect is, you know, I'll make sure my weekends are my weekends. I'll make sure my family time is my family time. But it's simple because I'm happy at what I'm happy with my job. I mean, I've got to be careful not to use the word job now.
Job,
but
yeah,
I'm happy at what I do. Yeah, I'm happy where I am. I'm happy with what I'm doing during the week. So it's like, you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to explain because honestly, it's natural. It just happens for me. And maybe I even look around me, like, you know, the people who work with me, you know, I don't know. I think it's saying compassion in the workplace. It's working with people. It's understanding what they need in their life. And I don't know. I can't explain it. And I guess that's been a huge part of our success as an organization.
Company values, is that something that you focus on? Or sort of how do you create a compass for your team?
Yeah, so see how you say company values is sort of, it's life values. It's just treating people. It's how you treat your kids. It's how mum and dad treated me. That's the way I treat people. Mm-hmm. I expect them to treat me the same way. And it's just, as opposed to, like, we are very, very unprofessional. We are, when I say unprofessional, I don't mean that in a bad term. We're a little bit unorthodox. And you know, in our business, we are very, very unorthodox, especially from the top, especially when I could speak for my headquarters and the rest of it. You know, like, it's just, we are very just, you know, you come in when you want and people end up giving you more and you go home when you want and and even the office layout and the setup, it's not an office as you expect. You know, I've got a restaurant in the middle of my office, you know, where people go and work and eat and there's food on all the time, there's drinks on all the time. So it's just... the whole workplace doesn't feel like a workplace. And when I say that, it's like me going to visit other offices, I guess, or other companies. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't work in that way. I have a very diverse sort of people. We all get along. By not expecting much from people, as long as you've hired the right people, they end up giving you so much. I literally have to say to people, man, go home. Go home. You've worked too hard.
You've had seven parmigianas at the cafe, mate. Just, you know, go home. Do a takeaway.
Enjoy. Food cost has gone up. Absolutely, man. Honestly, there is people in our business where we've got to say, listen, go home, man. It's all right. You know, you're going to burn yourself out. Go and just watch TV. Go and do something. Yeah.
What does focus mean to you?
Focus. I don't know. I don't know if I could ever focus. But, yeah, focus. I don't know. What's the word for it? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, is there a, do you think that you need to be focused to be doing, like, I guess you could have had 50 other different businesses. You could be, you know, like, it sounds like you're focused based on the customer and things like that.
But even focused based on 23 years in business.
Yeah, exactly. And so how do you sort of reconcile focus?
Matt, again, I swear to you, it's just a natural ability for me to just really, like, just naturally I'll get up and I don't want to sound like I'm going to put tickets on myself here, but I will. it's the way I look at it in business, and if you're meant to be an entrepreneur, it's a bit like a great athlete. I don't know if you've had a chance to speak to a great athlete. Yes, they have to focus, they have to train.
You're speaking to a couple of great athletes, right?
Yeah, I could imagine, mate. I could see that. It just flows. Like, it just, yes, you do focus, but it's inbuilt in you. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like it's not something I have to turn on. It's not like, oh, focus. Mm-hmm. It's not a turn on thing. It exists in my DNA. It exists in what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit honest. And when I was, if I'm saying like a natural cricketer, you know, ask him, where, he goes, I'm just in the zone. I don't know. Was I focused? Is that what you call it? But I was in the zone, you know?
Have you had to change anything that you do to be able to get people on the same page? Because I feel like with the gut instinct from the heart, not like it's all very using intuition, but I feel like potentially as you start to scale and have more people involved, all of a sudden they're asking questions of you that they might need answers. People might be operating slightly differently. Have you had to change anything over, you know, your lifetime to be a good leader?
Mate, you're learning every day, 100%. Like, you change every day as well.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you change. If I relate it back to family, Josh, again, you're changing because it's growing up. It's what you do. You know, I ask you at home, have you changed with your partner or whatever? Mm-hmm. It's yes, but it's not a conscious decision. Yeah, it's just a flowing thing. It's an ever evolving thing. But it's not where you go, oh, listen, tomorrow I'm going to start doing this, or tomorrow I'm going to start doing that. It's just being in it, being you know. And it's not to say I'm a workaholic. I'm far from a workaholic. Yeah. I'm far from workaholic. It's just, but what I do, I'm just so committed to. I guess it's hard, honestly, it just comes from within. I'm probably bad explaining it, but it just, you know, that's the best way. And I guess when you hear so many, when I meet people similar to myself, and I could say that we can have that frank conversation sometimes.
It sounds like you're referencing natural ability and things that you can't necessarily teach. When you look at something like an MBA or going to business school, what's your view on, you know, the learnt business world or the degree behind people?
Look, I think to have something like that behind you is going to make you a lot more powerful. It's going to make you so much more powerful. I have no doubt. But you also need to have the natural ability. Yeah, you need to have an MBA by itself, or, you know, any sort of, it's not enough. It's, for me, that's what I've seen, even with the people I employ. They got to have, and that's why when you ask the question, how do you find good people, how do you hire them, it's a very, very tough challenge. You got to have a mix. And if you've got, I've been fortunate because I've been able to surround myself with people who have degrees, so they've been able to sort of, you know, help me with things, because you do need a little bit of education, there's no question about that. But but you got to have that natural ability to lead and to be able to be an entrepreneur.
What have you learnt about yourself during COVID?
Oh my God, yeah, that's a good question. This is what I've learnt about myself. I'm more confident than what I thought I was. I thought of myself as being not very confident, but I realised how confident I am. I realised that I do very well. I was able to sort of stamp it, if you like, by the results I achieved and how quickly I move things. So I got a lot of self. The biggest thing is I got a lot of self-conf. I learned that I'm a lot more confident than what I thought I was. That's probably the biggest one.
And have you found mentors that have supported you over this time?
Mate, look, I've never had a mentor in my life. I've never had anyone who's sort of a senior level who's been involved in my life. So, yes, so, you know, when you talk about mentors, I don't get it again. And people say, who's your mentor? And, you know, people have tried to be my mentors. And I guess because I'm the way I work and the way I am, it's very, very, very hard. I've never been able to connect with anyone as a mentor.
What about reading books? I mean, people find mentors through podcasts. You mentioned you've never listened to a podcast.
Yeah.
Take my hat off to you.
Never read a book.
Never read a book. Never heard a podcast.
And never listened to a podcast. Never been on a podcast. Never read a book. I can't watch a movie. I'm a bit like that. You know what I mean?
No, I get it.
So I'm just in it, man. I just, like what I said, I just live it. I breathe it, and I work from the heart, and it just all comes. It just all flows.
I feel like you've got similarities with Gary Vee, but I feel like you'd be the type of guy who'd be real pissed off with that sort of connection. Do you know of Gary Vaynerchuk?
Gary who? I have heard of him, by the way.
And so what does it all look like for you going forward? Like, what are you excited about? And what do you think the biggest challenge is going to be for not only you, but for the rest of Australia in business over the next, you know, coming years?
Things are going to be very, very challenging. But where I'm excited is that I think I've got the formula. I know what the formula is to success today. And I think people like myself who work from the heart are going to be the people who succeed in this tough times. Because I think the community, the Aussies, like everyone has come together and just by the way I do things, by the will of God, the way I do things, the way I work with, like, you know, my local suppliers, I buy Australian, I do everything Aussie, I interact with my consumer. I think people have just gelled to me, they've magnated to me, and I think that's So I'm excited because I know what I'm doing is what people want today. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I'm really excited for the future, and I know I'm in the, you know, I'm in a space at the moment where people are feeling that, where I think my intuitions and my skills are what's needed in today's environment.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's an refreshing approach, Rami, because I think I spend a lot of time looking at people who have the answer for everything and they're very book smart and they've, you know, speaking the formula as it's written down. But then there's the, I feel like yours is a very Aussie approach to business. You've put your head down and you've felt it out all the way. And it doesn't work for everyone, but it's working for you, mate.
But it will work. Look, when you say it doesn't work for everyone, because I guess you've got to have it a little bit. Yeah, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? You know what I mean? And if you have it, and I guess what I want to try and do in my life from here on is I want to try and help people who have it. I want to see the people who have it. And I want to try and, I guess, motivate them. And not because people like myself too, because we're not book smart, because we're not that, because we don't, you know, we're not very articulate, we kind of sometimes get put down. And that's the truth. We get put down by other people easily. And I see those people. See, they're the people that are allowed to grow in my business as well, that I make sure I give a lot of rope to. I allow them to grow. I you know what I mean? I don't let mm-hmm. people push them down, because I could see that in people. You know, I see a young Rami in someone. And because we don't come like what you just said, you know, we're not, we're not your norm. You know what I mean? So I think we've got to encourage those people a bit more. And mm-hmm. yeah. And how that's what I'd love to be doing in the future.
How does that sort of connect with your parenting style? Do you have any sort of thoughts or philosophies on how to parent?
Yeah, mate. My kids, I've got four beautiful kids. So I got, from 12 to 5. And I try and give them as much rope as possible as well. I want them to find their own flair. I want them to be who they are. And I want them to, you know, we have a bit of a challenge between my wife and I, but you know, like, you know, she's very disciplined. She's about, you know, we're complete opposites in that sense. She's very disciplined, you know, bedtime, this. Where I believe you got to let, you know, I'm a little bit more, you know, as soon as mummy's away, I let them be themselves a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the fun guy as well. I'm the fun guy, but what I'm saying, what I would say to parents as well is that, yes, there needs to be discipline. We have to learn mm-hmm. discipline, but allow your kids, allow them to learn from their mistakes as well. I'm a huge believer of that, mate. Mm-hmm. Huge believer.
What about education? Do you think that traditional education, it seems like we don't learn much about the things that we probably should in regards to accounting and business and just personal finance, like all the shit that you actually need to live as an adult? How do you see the education system?
Don't start me. Seriously, mate. So I went through school, right? I went all the way to year 12. I still can't read and write. I'm borderline illiterate. I can, you know, my reading is better than my writing. No one was able to pick it up at school. How school teachers let me get through it, I don't know. I used to scribble my essays, and they used to get in trouble for bad writing as opposed to not being able to spell. And so our education is not made. So I'm sort of drifting a little bit because it's an emotional subject for me too, mate. It's like, yeah, I think our education, there's a formula they use, but that's not for everyone, you know? And I know the school. I know when I went to school, I'm listening a little bit more to my kids. You know, I do a little bit more with my kids today. I think it's slightly better, but still, mate, it's so far away from what the real world needs are. You know, I don't get it, mate. I don't get it.
So are there certain things that you can do as a dad to be able to make it easier? Like, is there certain decisions around education that has sort of become apparent in the way that you want to do things based on the experience you had?
Yeah, well, I tell you how I educate my kids. I make sure they come to work. During school holidays, I make sure they're here. I make sure I speak to them about, you know, bills. I make sure I speak to them about – I make sure I educate them about life, which I believe it doesn't happen, you know. And, yeah, so that's – I guess that's my education part. And, you know, I'm not saying we need people to go through and become doctors and work out the cure to cancer or to COVID-19. We need those people, you know what I mean? But I think the way we educate our people, we've got to be able to, you know, I don't know, we've got to funnel it more in a way where we allow people to go into, you know, to I guess go to where they belong, to be educated in the way they needed to be educated.
in an alternate reality, if you were to start all over again tomorrow, what would you do? What job would you create for yourself? Not job. What
lifestyle?
Lifestyle,
you know?
Would you create?
What life?
Mate, that's the easiest question you've given me all day. Wouldn't change a thing. Would not change one thing, mate. Love back everything. Love everything. Do it exactly the same way. Start as a pizza driver and work up the way I've worked up slowly, whatever it is. I'll do it exactly the same way, 100%.
What is it about the delivery driver? Because like John, the CEO or whatever, you know, the senior guy from Domino's.
Yeah.
He, you know, he famously sort of started as a delivery guy. Is it was that a different time? Like, is there the? It feels like there's less opportunities for that sort of story of start at the bottom and work your way up. Everyone wants sort of to fucking leapfrog and be senior straight up. Yeah, why do you think that happened in sort of the pizza industry?
You know, I worked with Dom May. We were dominant. Mm-hmm. We're franchisees together. Before he went on and made him. He's done very, very well for himself. So I think in the time too when I grew up, when I grew up for myself, it was like we were just coming out of a recession. It was hard to get a job. I mean, you know, things are a lot easier today. That's also the truth. You know, I don't want to make it like for the youngsters out there, but they're not prepared to work as hard. I could tell you that. I see that generation. They're not prepared. They want it gifted. They want everything put on a platter for them. But that's, I guess, you know, we're very, especially in this country, we're very, very fortunate, man. Even what we think is poor is nowhere near poor. Like the hunger is not there. You know what I mean? We know, like you see it, you know, we're not hungry. We're okay. We're going to be fine. And it's a beautiful thing to have, It's beautiful. So I think it's the hunger. I think that's the biggest thing. I think it's, you know, it's not that there isn't opportunities. There is more opportunities, but there's less hunger from that young generation.
Is it because I don't know if I can imagine I can't see the transition, say, in sort of the more modern businesses going from the Uber Eats, using the same sort of analogy, the Uber Eats delivery person making their way up and having the pathways. Did you sense or feel that there was that pathway for you?
No. It's not like I thought, I'm going to start off as a driver, then I'm going to do A, B, and C and get to Z. Mm-hmm. No, that's not the way. It's just... Again, I guess it's an inner passion, the inner drive that I had that got me to where it got me. I definitely didn't see it. I definitely didn't even think that I was capable. I'll be honest with you. I have very, very, very low self-esteem, all the rest of it. So it's not that. It's just about, that's what I encourage. If I want to speak to youngsters, mate, work from the heart, do what's right. Do what's right for whatever you're delivering, whether it's food, whether it's furniture, whether it's whatever it is. And I don't mean delivery as in just car delivery, as in making it happen And I know you'll succeed. I know that. I know the world is dying for people who are – I see it and, I'm obviously across a lot of business. People are dying for people who want to achieve, who want to kick goals. People – Australia's dying for it. We need it.
Mm-hmm. Have you got your hand in anything else? Like, are you doing any other businesses on the side?
Mate, look, I'll keep it simple. Everything that's sort of related to what I do. So my core business is – so what I have is I have an industrial kitchen downstairs. I have an industrial kitchen downstairs from my office. So I have a 5,000 square meter sort of industrial kitchen. And whatever I do is sort of linked to that. So yes, when you say I do have my fingers and other pies, I do. I have a brand called Udi, which I've started, which is like a home delivery business, it's fresh product. And that's resulted from COVID-19. So that's a fresh home pack, if you like, that gets delivered to you. And the protein and the protein is ready to be cooked, so you get a pan with it and all the rest of it. But also all the vegetables and everything else. So all the prep is done. So we promise that it's an idea that I got through COVID-19 to deliver to people's houses because there was no restaurants. So we deliver a meal to you in a pack where you're ready to cook it and simplified. And we promise that it'll be on your table in 10 minutes. So that's something that I'm working on a lot at the moment in the background. So that's called Udi. Give it a plug, OODEE. Udi, like foodie, but Udi. Yeah, so I'm doing a bit of that. And everything I do is all related to what my core business, which is a restaurant business. Mm-hmm. I don't go too far off, because why get into something you don't understand? Stick to what you know. Stick to what you know and you'll be fine. So, yeah, I do drift a little bit.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Mm. Yeah, stick to what I know. It makes it easy that way.
You've fired us up. We're pumped up.
Fired up.
Thanks, Rami, for coming on the podcast. As a first podcast that you've done, that was epic. Hopefully you're a guest on many others because it was good fun.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, guys.
Awesome. It's the Daily Talk Show. See you tomorrow, guys. Have a good one.
See you, guys.